Our next presenter is Fred Baumgartner. He is a fellow of the Society of Broadcast Engineers, a trustee of the Ennis Foundation, fellow of the Radio Club of America, and Nautel's TV product manager. Fred previously was director of broadcast engineering for Qualcomm's MediaFlow project. He directed Leach Harris Systems Engineering Group and served as director of engineering for the Comcast Media Center in Denver. Earlier in his career, he held positions of chief engineer at several broadcast stations around the country, including WIBA AM and FM here in Madison. He began his career in 1972 with an overnight gig and a newly minted FCC first-class license at WBIZ AM and FM in Eau Claire many moons ago. Fred was also heavily involved with the development of EAS and has authored several hundred articles on radio and TV engineering. Fred Baumgartner.
Well, we're off to a good start. There we go. I'm a little embarrassed already because I was sitting back there and I was looking at the last set of slides and I realized that in each and every slide there's more words than I have in this entire presentation. Well, this started some time ago. John Pori and I were sitting at NAB. We do these Ennis sessions on Saturday. And so we have a little bit of experience about putting together programs. And I'm going to pitch that right now and say we're going to do almost all of Saturday next year on ATSC 3.0. It's turned out that that is really gaining a lot of traction very, very quickly. I'm looking forward to Mr. Adrich speaking tomorrow on the topic, et cetera. But I'm just blown away by how quickly all this stuff is happening. So as we go into putting together the Saturday session, we always start by asking, you know, what's the most important thing for broadcast engineers to know? And right now, the answer to that is what ATSC 3.0 is doing. There are other things in it. There's a little bit of radio and all that kind of stuff, and we'll have that in the program. But I mention this because as we put programs together and we get paper submissions for Ennis and stuff like that, usually anything that says where continued convergence, where we're giving advice about careers and stuff, we kind of shy away from. So I probably would have rejected my own paper in this case. Nonetheless, we do some breath mints, and I'm kind of hoping that you find this a little bit relaxing and entertaining here for a bit. And besides that, you've got Wayne right afterwards, which is probably the most wonderful speaker in the world, so maybe the best thing that can happen is I'll go through this fairly quickly. So anyway, we started out with doing this, trying to put together this program, and the NAB said, why don't you do something on what is happening with working engineers? And John put together a whole bunch of statistics and slides, and I put together all sorts of trends and stuff, and we did a little program, and it went off fairly well. And the other part of that is I changed jobs, and all of a sudden I'm working with a bunch of radio guys again, and I'm trying to talk about television and whatnot. And it occurred to me that there's a lot of interesting comparisons between the two of them, and that kind of turned into this presentation, which was meant to be a little bit more lighthearted and whatnot. And you can tell that any presentation that starts out with three titles is already in trouble. Red one. Okay. They actually said that. Okay. So what's on the agenda is we're going to talk a little bit about how broadcasting specialized, a little bit about how it converges again, and how to manage in this world. And that's the part that always scares me, is when some broadcast engineer gets up and says, this is how you're supposed to manage your career. This is my life and my qualifications for this. The real ones are that I got to work in a really strange part of broadcasting. Worked for emerging broadcast opportunities group within Harris. And their job was to look at the trends and say, well, what is the business going to do, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a really fascinating group to work with. It comes out of IBM's mentality where they're trying to chart where the course is going to be. Is it mainframes? Is it little frames? All that kind of stuff. So you can imagine the kind of interesting conversations that happen inside there. So that's me. That's my 50-in-1 project kit that got me into this whole thing. My first job in radio. That's my son with the headphones. That's not me. and my scattered career outside. So I have kind of an interesting perspective on it. And the other is that for the last 19 years, I've worked on programs for the SB. That's kind of my passion. kind of my hobby. Also, it's a little bit selfish because when I don't know something, I just go find some expert and I try and talk him into presenting it there, and somehow that kind of works out. This is the craziness of it. That's my backyard. That's a Kinstar antenna sitting on top of that building. Inside the building is a BC-1F. It is 1 year older than I am, and the minute I retire, I'm going to rebuild that and put it on 160 meters. If it wasn't for this, I'd be bonding the ground system and sending the Mr. King off the results of the antenna. He's interested. I told him 20 years ago I was going to do this. I'm just getting around to it. But my passion is transmitters, which kind of takes me to Autel. So it's kind of getting to the end of my career, and I get to finally work on transmitters. And I'm not kidding. I love this a lot more than I ever did any studio, any branding, any internet, anything along the line. Transmitters are still the coolest things on Earth. So what I'm trying to do is take that little tiny group of television transmitters there and try and turn them into something that looks like what they do. Why am I doing that? Why do I think this is fun? Is because radio transmitters have moved forward an awful lot, and television transmitters have remained pretty dumb. So if you look inside a radio transmitter in this day and age, there we go. If you look inside it, you find that disaster recovery is starting to be built into it, a certain amount of insertion, branding, and not to mention all the test tools and the other cool things that in television transmitters remain relatively static. So part of the Nautel television is to bring that kind of control and visibility not only into the radio transmitters, but also into the television side of it. And that is a lot of fun along the line. But I did that mostly to give you an example of a theme that I'm going to carry throughout here. And that is that innovation is basically stealing, sometimes we call it learning, from the adjacent technologies. So a lot of times something happens inside radio or something happens inside TV and we kind of borrow it elsewhere inside IT. And you'll find this throughout the industry is that the more you know about the adjacent industries and how they do it, the more fodder you have, the more to dream about, the more innovation that you can come up with. So let's talk about history. I was startled years ago to learn that when Troy fell, people in England knew about that within 48 hours. Now, how in the world can that happen? Well, it turns out that way back when broadcasting starts, there were communication networks that went at a long distance. They sometimes used fire, smoke signals, and semaphore, but this is 1800 in France. Yes, it looks like the AT&T network diagram for the state of, pick a state of Wisconsin for that matter, but the reality is that this is a whole series of manned semaphore sites, and they could communicate messages very quickly from one end of the country in a very, very short period of time. By the way, it was also done 2 bits per slice. If you look at the little antenna-looking thing there, they would put 2 symbols up simultaneously. So it was also fairly early into the compression of data communication. And the other is that a book that really changed my perspective on this is I was wandering around the University of Wisconsin shelves, you know, the technical books up there, and there was this whole stack of books, and the title was The History of Radio Prior to 1926. Now, WIBA went on the air in 1926, and I think TSO and TMJ went on in the year before. And I'm thinking, yeah, right, there's the book this thick about the history of broadcasting. And I started reading it in the shelves because at the time I didn't have a card. And I had to read the entire book all the way through, and eventually I tried to steal one and then buy it. Thank you, the internet. They're now about 39 cents. But there actually is this huge history of broadcasting before there's electronic broadcasting, just the way the messages are passed, the way you communicate with people. So broadcasting was not invented with radio. Radio is just the electronification of that. So our timeline looks something like this. In 1925, 10 kilohertz is a lot of bandwidth to broadcast with. In 1948, we come up with pictures, a wonderful new radio feature that's going to improve radio dramatically. And in 1950, we get the great broadcasting schism, where television goes off one way and radio goes off in another way. Then nothing much happens until about 1980, and IT comes along as a disintermediation of almost everything in the battle between RF and IT. In 1990, digital media comes along, another major change in the way things work, and the film and the analog storage methods go away, the LPs disappear and all turn into files. And then we hit 2011, and I use this as a starting day because this is the day when Ubiquiti said, by the way, we managed to build television into our FM transmission iBox standard here, which gives us 1948 a do-over where we can start to talk about putting pictures back with radio signals again. So television, of course, is radio with a light. The interesting part about this is that we think of one day television was invented and all sorts of people changed their career to follow television, and it was a separate media. But in the very first year, that was not the case. In the very first years, it was strictly a feature. It was a feature every bit, as much as HD is to FM, as every bit as much as AM stereo was to AM. It was just an add-on. There was no Marshall McLuhan out there talking about hot and cold media. There was no separation in this at all. This was a feature. We were going to take our radio shows, we were going to point a camera at it, we're going to provide some video, and we are going to have this feature that is going to attract all sorts of attention at the end of the day. So in the beginning, we have this big transformation here. The Jack Benny Show, you know, starts on NBC Radio, eventually winds up on television. Amos and Andy, The Lone Ranger. Down the road here, Dragnet, Ozzy and Harriet, all of these shows. What's amazing, though, is that a lot of shows never made the transition at all, never used the television feature, couldn't figure out a way to put compelling video to go along with the program, so just didn't, and eventually disappeared off the dial. We're still adding pictures to radio. So the Mighty Bush, Loveline, if you like those guys in Los Angeles, Hitchhiker's Guy, Ira Glass, all have a television element to what is primarily a radio show at the end of the day. So let's talk about the Great Schism and what happens here. In the very beginning, television engineers came from two camps. They were either radio engineers that were now learning video, or they had just graduated from DeVry because they saw that ad in the back of Popular Electronics Magazine about how you could make a fortune in the television business. SMPE, the Society of Motion Picture Engineers, founded in 1960, became SMPTE in 1950. A major change, and I think SPE is sitting on one of those right now. Or you have to wonder if we're going to take on IP distribution as part, or are we just an over-the-air bunch of people here? And TV was absolutely destined. Now, remember, it starts out as a feature, but by now it's destined to kill the movies and to kill radio. There is no point in having a radio. Why listen when we can watch? And why go out to the movies when you can watch it in your living room? We're going to destroy those industries. Now, there's a very obvious answer for both of those. The first one is, why listen when we can watch? Well, you can't do anything useful while watching television. So the whole idea of being able to cook in the kitchen or paint or drive and watch television at the same time, especially the drive and watch television at the same time, just doesn't work. So television doesn't work there at all. The second one I didn't quite get. You know, why didn't this destroy movies? And my wife pointed this out to me one evening as we're sitting there on the couch watching the big screen with the wonderful sound system and the recently released DVD, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. And she says, we should go to a movie. And I go, why? We've got it all right here. And she looks at me and says, this does not constitute a date or an outing. I'm bringing her to the dinner tonight. You should meet her. She's the first person ever to hear the EAS thing. And she was also the first one to ever call it a duck fart. So there's this guy, this Ennis guy, because remember, there's all these radio engineers out here, and they're trying to learn TV, you know, because that's a new thing, it's going to destroy radio. If we don't do this, do you hear the IT echoes? You know, you don't catch on to this, the world is going to come to an end. So this guy named Harold Ennis started writing books about it, and there's two camps on this. One is he's the most brilliant guy in the entire world, which I subscribe to, and the other one is that he stole all of this from the manuals of RCA and just turned it into material that engineers could consume, which, by the way, I think is what the smartest guy in the world would do. This is really interesting piece. So while researching this, and yes, I actually did some research, went back to the Society of Motion Picture Television Engineers archives. And this is the critical moment where Earl J. Spoonable, who's the president, on October 10th, 1949 in Hollywood, when there's 3,000 members, it's half the size of the SBE, he says, "It is my sincere personal belief that such a change will profit the society and the industry, and I hope that your enthusiastic support of the enlarged program, which I have just outlined, will in time prove the wisdom of this course." What's very interesting about that is if you spend any time with the LA chapter of the Society of Motion Picture Television Engineers, you can easily find old gray-haired people who think that this is when SMPE went completely to hell, that this was the worst decision that they had ever made as a society to this day, and they're absolutely positive about that. So look at the publishing world. Broadcast Engineering magazine for the longest time addressed broadcasting as a whole. It's gone. But we have three radio magazines. The SB Signal is the only truly straight broadcast engineering magazine. And on the TV side, we have just TV technology, unless, of course, you include streaming media and the SCTE, which address television pretty directly. So the question is, why is this true? And I ran into Carmel King, and I said, yeah. She's the publisher for New Bay, and I hope I got that right. And she had talked to me once years ago into writing an article, so it's all her fault that I started writing. And by the way, I found those articles, and I found the draft I sent, and the one they published, and they're like completely not the same thing. And the one I sent was just an absolute piece of crap. And I said, for 30 years, I've owed you an apology for that. And she said, I was just grateful you sent it in. She says that the difference is that in radio, it's all about passion. And in television, it's just business. And I think that's a rather profound sight of the business here. So let's look at what SBE does. These are the certifications up here. The very top certification and the very bottom certification are broadcast generic. Everything else is either about audio, video, IT, radio, or television. So let's talk about convergence. We're going to take it from several aspects. One is, let's look at TV without pictures. All of us have learned that we can turn the TV on in the kitchen and do something without watching it. It becomes video wallpaper. But to turn it into an art form, there was the TV without pictures, TV radio. The last one that I know of is the Sony analog version. Most of them were VHS, very few car versions out there. There's not a DTV version, and actually there's a good reason why there's not a DTV version. One is moving very quickly, doesn't do 8VSB all that good. And the second is the price of the display is so low, why would you leave it out? So there's no point of making one that doesn't have a display on it. How many of you have this? This is the last one in production. It is still available at Walmart. So TV without pictures. So I work for this company that's in Peggy's Cove, and Nova Scotia has no AM radio stations left in it, very much like most of the civilized world. So during the daytime, there is nothing on the AM dial at all. But at night, the boomers come in as they shoot over Long Island on the way up the coast here, and WCBS just knocks you out of your chair. So Sunday night, I'm driving around having fun, looking at the lobster boats and all that. It's a very idyllic place up there. And I'm looking for what's on the AM radio, and it pops alive as soon as the sun starts to set. And I'm listening to 60 Minutes, both on CBS and WJAD, Canadian, that's out of Montreal, on 800. And I also know that I can find the same program on the internet. And I remind you, too, that NPR's TED Talks are really all about taking a TV show and turning it into a radio show. So what about radio with pictures? Again, our friends at NPR are just wonderful about this. Virtually all of the NPR clips that they talk to about in their news stories where they say, go to our website and there's more material there. Very few of them are devoid of pictures. Very few of them are devoid of moving pictures at the end of the day. VU House is especially this way. If you listen to the new age music part of National Public Radio, You'll find the programs out there, and they have music videos. They are first and foremost a video source, and secondarily a radio one at the end of the day. And then, of course, there's video on HD radio. You have Clear Channels, Artist Experience, Ibiquity's Advanced Application Services over HD, which is kind of in the back of the book when you get to it, but it's a way to be able to send video over it. And of course, we've been doing video over very limited bandwidth for a very long period of time here. Obviously, the hams have been doing slow scan television, and the reality is even that first space shot to the moon, the first trip up there, it's a wonderful long story about it, but that was not a television transmission channel that was on. That was an audio channel that had been repurposed to send the video, and the reality is of what you saw at home sitting there in front of your televisions that late night was actually a camera pointed at a CRT. That was the format converter of the time, and they've even lost the original tape of it. That's how much they thought of this whole process in here. Also, there's a great movie called The Dish, which is the Australian, it's about the Australian station that did the downlink on it and how close they came in a windstorm to just losing the whole thing. It's an absolute mirror. It's the edge of your seat radio television kind of drama is what it is. So radio with television. There is, in fact, an ATSC radio that is meant for automobiles. It actually puts out video. It's actually meant for the back seats more than anything else. But you could run a radio program on ATSC. Why would you do radio on ATSC? Or why would you do it even on cable systems in QAM? Well, the first thing is if you spend any time in hotels, you realize that the radios they put in hotels are substandard. So there's also several internet services that have attempted to fill the gap. I find myself in hotel rooms frequently listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, for example. But unfortunately, hotels' internet is somewhat substandard on occasion also. So there is this world where there is radio with TV, meaning basically what's a TV standard. They're also sending television on. And obviously, there's a lot of places that run reading service for the blind on a sub-channel and things like that. But if you look at DTMB, ISDB, all of these involve some ability to send a radio program along with them. And obviously, DVB-T and DVB-BH, and of course, DMB and DAB were built for audio right from the very beginning. So radio with the internet, well, we all kind of know about Bob and Tom and Howard Stern and, of course, the king of all, combined media, Prairie Home Companion with Garrison Keillor. So closing the technology gap, what's it like? Well, data transmission tools, if you look at radio or television on the digital side, you have Reed Solomon, interleaving, randomizer, trellis encoding. The business model is also the same. You know, you're either asking people to send you money because you're doing good things, or you're trying to get them to buy things so people buy advertising on your station. And they all are free over the air at the end of the day. So the business models is like. So this is kind of as I get into the fun of playing with the Nautel guys, which, by the way, are the most fun guys you will ever meet in your entire life. And these guys live, breathe, and eat transmitters, in particular radio transmitters, from beginning of the day to the end. Jeff Welton's just one of the crew inside that group. But you start to talk about what's different, what's the same in it. So what's different? Well, in radio, the digital transition's hybrid. In television, it was a forklift. Made the big switch overnight, you know, totally made all the old TVs useless, had to go get a $20 converter box to get there. Radio has a secondary service. Television dreads a secondary service. If your signal leaks out of the DMA, that's a problem. Radio was built for Doppler. You can put it on a spaceship. You can't go too very fast with the current version of digital radio, digital television, which is probably the greatest reason for ATSC3, in my humble opinion. EVM, similar, steady progression to all digital on the radio side. And on the TV, the change is going to be, I'm talking to Jay. He's going to look at me and wonder why I asked this question about how plausible it was to have a simple dongle conversion for an existing display device to ATSC3, and a bit more complicated than that. A gateway device probably necessary. But it's not a heavy lift. You're not throwing out the old tube like you used to. You've already got the display. You've already got the networks. You've already got a lot of things in here. So transition television is somewhat easier going into ATSC3. Things you don't see much in radio, you don't see statistical multiplexing. You don't see expensive video encoding and decoding. You don't see PSIP. In fact, it's hard to explain to radio guys what PSIP and EPG is. You don't see extensive ensembles. You don't see timing, PCR. Radio doesn't worry about lip sync. You don't see multitudes of content formats. You don't see encryption, conditional access. What radio station would do that? You don't see COM act in radio, although there are times. You don't see EAS, CROLs. You don't see closed captions. You don't see descriptive audio. You don't see content ratings or parental controls on radio, but again, maybe it's about time for some of that. You don't see big bandwidth. You don't see UHF. There's no radio on UHF anywhere. Really complex filters, high-value spots. There's nothing called SCTE 30, 35, or 104, and there's no out-of-band DTMF triggers in radio, as far as I know, at least not reasonably. And things you don't see in TV. Well, you don't see universal streaming because of that DMA problem. You have to do some sort of geolocation piece to it. You don't see disc jockeys. You don't see call-in shows. And you don't see sustaining, not block programming. And you don't see voice tracking where the talent that does the news, is in the studio in front of the camera. They didn't phone it in. So one of the big changes in here is that cameras are essentially free. They stuck two of them on all of your phones. Didn't even ask you about it, just gave it to you. You can, you know, the big problem with getting into television in the beginning is that everything was so expensive. I mean, a good television camera costs more than a 1 kilowatt AM radio station from one end to the other. Now, they're virtually identical here. IP and IT barely cares whether there's video on it. Take a look at Skype. Skype works as a phone call. Skype works with video in it. Nowhere does it say, oh, by the way, there's a penalty for turning your camera on. And this is, we had some fun with this. So let's talk about an ENG shoot just for an example here. I know you pretty much all know ENCO's IDAD or something similar, where you get to do a story in the field and send it in, and no human beings have to touch it or record it, and it shows up in the newsroom and you get to use it. We did a little experiment at my last television station. It was meant to be a joke, and it kind of turned out to be scary. We wanted to know if you could do an ENG shoot just with iPhone devices. So what we did is we used one iPhone for the camera, we send one for the prompter, one for the IFB, one for the wireless mic, and one for lighting, the flashlight application.
And it worked.
It worked. The scary part, the news director put it on, thought it was cool. Convergence. Let's talk about bandwidth. So, on this side, I don't have a laser. On this side, television, you know, we've got 19 megabits, 6 megahertz wide channel. The other extreme is on AM, where you've got, you know, 36 kilobits at the end of the day, and it's really tough to make anything that looks like video on it. But the funny thing is, you know, FM not so much. FM you can restructure in such a way as to get from 40 to 100 kilobits, and now you're in the range where you can do more than just sending album art. You can send graphics along with it. There's an awful lot of potential for conversion along that line. If you get crazy like the guy, this is the part I love about Nautel, is there's no practical human use for this, as far as I know, but the engineer just thought it was ultra cool. Turns out there actually is kind of a use. If you were in a country, for example, where there was no FM to start with, you could just go to digital immediately, and with very few transmitters, put 15 audios on each transmitter. You could set up an awful lot of networks automatically. I don't know that there's any real life situation for that, but these guys just think this kind of stuff is cool. We will do a little piece at the Ennis program on hacking radio, because these guys are nuts. And I'll just leave that out there. There's some crazy things they can do with it. Convergence, mind experiment. Well, this is my fun part. We're going to take a little side trip into spectrum. Okay. I've never quite understood, when I first started in television, I had U's and V's. And the guys on the Vs wanted to keep the Vs in the absolute worst way. Channel 2 is the most valuable frequency on the planet. And as far as I was concerned, it was hard to receive. The antennas were big. The noise was bad. You couldn't make bandwidth or the crap on any transmitter. There's just nothing good about Channel 2. You know, I thought Channel 14 was pretty wonderful at the end of the day. But, you know, young guy, you know, that's just anathema. So let's talk about this. So we start out with the medium wave, long wave, low frequency. The beauty of that is you can go for the horizon. If you work this out for only 50 million watts at 500 kilohertz, you can put basically a grade B at, everywhere on the planet. it goes a long way, it goes over the horizon, et cetera. HF, it goes everywhere or nowhere. The beauty of it is that when conditions are right, it takes very little power to go a very long distance. Any of you are hams, you know that when 10 meters is open, 1 watt will get you around the world. When it's closed, 1 million watts isn't going to get you over the next hill. So it just depends on where the maximum usable frequency is. VHF is very good for rural. You know, put an antenna up on top of a silo. You can go a long, long way. Channel 2 goes way over the horizon in this. And this is also where radio is stuck, you know, the FM side of radio up there. UHF is best for urban settings. There is no radio on UHF and outside of Europe. But it has the benefit of being able to have a small enough aperture that it gets between the 2x4s and through the windows. The aperture effect is the reason why with an AM radio, when you drive under a bridge, you lose it because the wavelength exceeds the size of the opening in the bridge at the end of the day. So you got to have a wavelength that's smaller than the holes it has to go through. In modern constructions, the holes get kind of small here. So VHF is very difficult to get it through metal studs and through any kind of building that's common anymore. UHF a whole lot better for that, for penetration. SHF is where the bulk of all bandwidth is at the end of the day, but it's all short hop. Most of the world's communication probably winds up in the SHF frequencies here as time goes on, meaning 3 gig and above, and it's a series of microcells and it all does 100 megabits or 100 gigabits or, you know, some awesomely large number at the end of it. EHF is best maybe for short range remote controls and toys. I can't figure out what you do with it. This is a tool, if you want to play with the differences between the bands just for fun. Nautel, again, puts this up as free. You just join up as a NUG member in Nautel users group, and you can hammer in your frequencies and powers and heights, and it'll pull up a terrain map. That happens to be my house. That's my 1-watt FM transmitter at the top of the 90-foot tower. Now that the FCC is no longer enforcing any of those regulations, I find back to the mind experiment. This is the fun part. So it turns out that technology is more about history than it is anything else. A number of you have been through this and, you know, smile because, you know, you just can't blow up the universe and start all over again each time. You inherit all the mistakes of your predecessors and all the foibles of the previous systems and their understanding, and they think VHF is great and they think television will only be consumed in living rooms, and then you start building systems to do that kind of thing at the end of the day. So this is just a mind experiment I played a while ago that I really kind of like because it leads to some interesting discussion. Is if you could start broadcasting all over again, forget radio, television, everything else, but if I could reinvent broadcasting today, what would it look like? Well, let's start with thinking, that's a cute little ad here, where we're at. At the moment, AM needs revitalization. Television needs ATSC 3.0 reinvention. Television also needs repacking. FM still needs to get on smartphones. And the truth of the matter is the only broadcast media that isn't notably broken at the moment is probably FM. So what if? What if we took the UHF frequencies 14 through 47, you have to put a stake in the ground somewhere, and we break them into 4 blocks, and we start to assign them on a cellular basis. So in cell number 1 here, we use block number 1 for broadcast. It's a 50 megahertz wide piece. Cell number 2, we use block number 2. You get the pattern. Now, of course, the world's DMAs aren't cut up into things that look like blocks necessarily, but what would happen if you did it here in Wisconsin? Because I knew all the towns, this is kind of a way to do it. Well, the blocks, the cells get smaller and larger depending on where they are, but you can kind of take that DMA map and turn it into something that kind of looks like that, especially if you've got the ability to do single frequency networks and repeating, and you can change the size and shape of each of these cells to fit the DMAs that they really represent at the end of the day. So what happens is that in every block, you've taken one block, or every cell, you've taken one block of the four blocks of frequencies, and you've made three available for wireless communications, et cetera, et cetera. So 50 megahertz for broadcasting, 150 for everything else, and you just rotate these as you go around. Broadcasting is the prime, all the rest of the wireless is the secondary. So what could you do with it? Well, let's be really conservative and say that we're going to pull off 2 bits per slice. We're going to do some reasonably heavy FEC. You can argue this all day long. You can make it very variable. But let's experiment with this. See if this even makes sense. So let's say our payload is 75 megabits. But it's a payload today. So the first thing we're going to do, of course, is use the most efficient codecs we have. Current versions, ACVC, et cetera. So let's take and say that we have 250 radio stations. I'm going to stop here for a second and give you my point of reference. I live between Denver and Colorado Springs. I have a rooftop antenna, all that kind of stuff. I scanned my television and I got 81 stations last time, 81 services. I scanned my radio, got 80. That's a scary thought. So let's take 250 radio stations here, and this is the rate that Sirius XM uses, the 0.039. So for 9.75 megabits of payload, I've got 250 radio stations. Now let's take what MediaFlow did and quarter VGA, run it at 15 frames a second, but put 50 different video services on, make it look kind of like a cable system. I burn up another 12.5. So let's take standard definition. We're going to throw a couple of those in, about 20. We're going to burn up another 12 megahertz here. We got to do EAS and things like that. So let's give the government 4 megabit of this common stream here. That takes us up to 50 megabits. We still have 25 left to play with. Well, let's take the 25 leftovers and use 10 megabits for things like big time EAS when the world comes to an end. And let's talk about putting a couple of public educational things in there. That still leaves us 15 megabits of leftovers here. Let's take another bunch of that and just do 4K, you know, for the Super Bowl and when we really need high resolution. A little bit of time redundancy for the radio so you can drive through tunnels. Better fidelity, maybe throw in a little Dolby Atmos, AC4. More services, more robust transmission, cut the data rate, yada, yada. More non-commercials, et cetera. So the point is, you can do a lot of services, maybe not at the highest quality level, but these are free to home. Anybody can get them, the guy under the bridge, people out in the country, on that single mind experiment that we're doing here. And if we do it right, we can set it up so we can start using single frequency networks and distributed antenna systems. That's a distributed antenna system. So if I want this to go into a tunnel, distributed antenna systems are difficult if I've got a bunch of different stations on different frequencies. But if all I'm doing is taking a 50 megahertz blob and transferring it into a tunnel. By the way, that's outside NAB headquarters in DuPont Circle. That's their DAS. There's a DAS in the metro system there. If you've seen these things, what they're doing is they're feeding them with, obviously, cell phone traffic and all that. But you could also put broadcast services on it. It's radiax, leaky coax going on either end down the tunnels from there. So for that, also there's venues. If you want to light up a venue and make the device work in there, you set up a distributed antenna system. The things we lose in this. Well, first of all, everybody winds up with the same coverage, and we're so used to having this have and have nots. You know, it's the 50 kilowatt AM flamethrower versus the 1 kilowatt daytime only kind of thing. This is tough on low power and community because there's a limited number of spaces inside this kind of system. There's no guard bands or taboos. That's a little tongue-in-cheek. The only guard bands and taboos are in the edge of that block, so that's good. We don't waste a lot of spectrum. Multiple big towers go away. You only need really one big one. And we get out of the individual EAS business because it's a single multiplex. The EAS is taken care of by the government, and it doesn't bother the broadcasters. It's just a bunch of bits on the end that can control the device at the end of the day. Why it's not ridiculous? Well, you could take the money from spectrum sales and set up transmission consortiums. You had a bigger bang for the dollar than now. You could come up with a formula for granting bandwidth rights. That's a little tough, you know, because how do you take stations that have different coverages now and put them into this kind of plan? But it plays nice with wireless at the end of the day. Very limited interference. Those single frequency networks have fewer overheated RF spots that would interfere with the wireless service. So it's not the most ridiculous thing in the entire world, but it's just a mind experiment. If you could do it all over again, maybe that's an approach you would take rather than multiple big towers and big transmitters, et cetera. So let's talk about convergence and why it's the best of time. Broadcast station components. You got a slice of the spectrum, you got local content, and you got a sales organization. The internet does not have that. Powerful engine for the next generation. You are the incumbent at the end of the day. Multi-channel news says that there will be $61 billion spent on broadcast television in the next election cycle, on advertising. 51% of that will be on broadcast television, 5.9% on radio, and the next guy down the line is about 4%. So when you look at the amount of money that's going into broadcasting, it's really still a pretty huge number. This is actually a Rich Woods line. The Pony Express is the only communication system ever retired. I don't expect radio or television to go away. I think that is the most profound thing I've heard here in a long time. The golden age of radio was actually after television. The golden age of television is clearly now. If you look at the spend and the time spent listening cycles, even today, broadcasting dominates it. The cost per thousand, again, broadcasting dominates that. Yet you see the little red line down at the bottom. So there is an upcoming tsunami from internet traffic or internet broadcasting. So about people like us. So I thought radio was a play thing, but now I'm making over $100 a week. I guess things don't change that much. This is our demographics. You can see where you are on here. This was in 2001. In 2011, all it did was move. We're getting an older population, obviously. So what about us? That whole innovation cycle is radio to television to IT. That's what a broadcast engineer is. If you think that you're a tape engineer or a transmitter engineer or anything else like that, that's probably not a good way to look at the world. We know all these things and all we do, but it's difficult to pigeonhole yourself. Broadcasting is going to be around, it's going to change in its technology, and if you see yourself as a broadcast engineer as opposed to, God forbid, a camera engineer, that's probably a whole lot healthier place to be. Also, you've got a lot of other pieces in it. There's a lot of physical infrastructure to take care of. Years ago in here, they used to argue that, you know, taking care of the toilets as a chief engineer was a bad deal. And I went, you know, that is job security. The truth of the matter is he who controls the building is in a pretty good position at the end of the day. And you've got all sorts of new stuff to play with along the lines here. So I think that this is the best of all times. I think this is by far the most interesting times here for broadcasting. But I think it's really tough to get your head around the idea that it is broadcasting and that all the pieces and parts are in flux and that the entire television system will be rebuilt here and IT distribution will, you know, start to take off. But I don't see us giving up the sales organization or the position that broadcasting is in any way, shape, or form here at the end of the day. What's not going to change, it's still going to have lousy hour, poor play, be on call, have to deal with the creatives. And it's still showbiz, which we all know is extremely glamorous. So this is the bad part. This is my advice part. Number one, get over IP 101. It's not about the physical layer or the protocol at all. It's about the business. Don't worry about the next generation of engineers. When the opportunity appears, they will appear. They're already learning all their IT skills, which is the replacement for soldering irons and voltmeters, and they will be ready when broadcasting is ready for them. Embrace the opportunity more than the history. There's a lot of fun out there. As much as I love talking about quad machines, it's not going to get me anywhere at the end of the day, but it is a warm fuzzy, so don't feel guilty over it either there. You are not a TV or a radio engineer or any kind of medium or technology engineer. You are, in fact, a broadcast engineer. I love this. My wife has horses, and yeah, they really are this stupid. That's a donkey. Sometimes the limit is in your mind. So, obviously, end commercial here, Nautel, all sorts of websites. You know how to get there, I'm sure. I like Bill Nye's line, everyone you will ever meet knows something you don't. That's really why I like coming here. I learn so much even in the hallways and over lunches and things like that. And of course, we're good for questions. Maybe next year I'll be bringing television transmitters. That would be cool. So thank you very much for your attention. And I think this is cool. I mean, the rest of the world, there's this big move out there towards this kind of technology, the combination of radio and television in mobile devices. And I have 40 seconds, and I can't imagine anybody having a question. So thank you. Thank you.